At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello, my name's Donna Fraser and I would love to tell you about Give Me Five, which is a Her Spirit initiative to get more women running and walking over the coming months. It all starts on Monday the 26th of October. We passionately believe that every woman can enjoy running. Give Me Five is holistic and isn't all about pounding the pavements and is designed to help you run more easily from breathing to posture, building strength and developing overall fitness. I will also be supported by the Her Spirit coaching team who will take you week by week for 8 weeks on a small steps journey to a fun 5 kilometer walk or run. And I'm so excited to be supported by Claire Danson and Caroline Martin. Just go to www.herspirit.co.uk and click on our programs for more information on how to sign up and join me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Her Spirit podcast. And Annie, I asked on a podcast in times gone past how the chickens were.
The chickens, good. You know what? They're not very happy today. I've had a word with my husband because it's wet, isn't it? They don't like the rain. Poor little sausages, and they're all huddled under their little home. And I think we've got to work harder because if we're going to get any eggs, you know, we've got to keep them happy, the girls.
So how old are they now?
I'm not sure of their age, but I think they're about 2 weeks away from delivering us some eggs.
Are they? And I don't have chickens. So what are you going to make their life happy? And then suddenly, hopefully, eggs will appear.
Do you know what? Honestly, you'll never believe this, Lou. But these girls, no one would ever believe this. Chickens like to be cuddled, and they purr like cats. And you pick them up, and they snuggle in, and they're the sweetest things. And I cannot believe I ever thought I'd say a chicken is sweet, but they're really, really sweet. Genuinely, really sweet.
And you think cuddles are going to mean nice eggs?
Yeah. Happy chickens, lots of eggs. That's why those eggs that they sell, happy eggs. You know, the make happy eggs. You know, happy eggs make good chickens. I tell you one thing. Last week I went shopping to, like, you know, because it wasn't a very nice, you know, weather's sort of turning, isn't it? It's autumn. It's Sunday lunchtime, isn't it? Roast kind of thing. And I thought, you know, I'll get a chicken. And I went to pick up this chicken in the supermarket. And I thought.
And you felt bad.
No, I can't do it. I can't have a whole chicken in my oven with the other chickens, like, just 10 meters away in their little coop. So no more full big roast chickens in this house.
You know, chicken thighs still come from chickens.
But they don't, anyway, yeah, let's move on. Go on. How are you, Lou? How are you?
I'm really good. And I'm really excited. We've got a great guest to talk to us today. And she does a different, totally different kind of running to me. I'm a long distance ambler, as you know, but our guest is absolutely fantastic over a completely different distance.
She certainly is. And it is the lovely Libby Clegg, MBE. She's 2 times Paralympian champion, 2 gold medals in Rio. She got a silver in London and a silver in Beijing. And she was also the world record holder in Rio when she won the gold in the 100 and the 200. And yes, she is a little bit quicker than you, Lou. Welcome. Welcome, Libby Clegg. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And you're at home right now, aren't you? And you've got a little boy. Is he away for the day? Where is he?
He's thankfully in nursery today, so I've got a little bit of peace and quiet.
Libby, isn't it funny how you sort of like say, thankfully, but listen, I'm with you, hon. Look, we love them to bits, but you know, it's nice to have your own time too. And look, they have a great time in nursery as well, don't they?
They do. They love, well, he loves going to nursery. And funnily enough, this nursery has rabbits and chickens, so, and he loves them.
Do you know what? I can't believe we're going to talk about rabbits now because we've got quite a few pets in our house, including 2 dogs. Do you know this, Annie? I've got 2 mini Shetlands that are rescue ponies. which I adore. And then we've got a rabbit, which we've had. I mean, this rabbit must be sort of 6-7 years old or something. And she is just absolutely adorable. And like you say, you think, oh, rabbit, you know, I don't know, maybe not the most interesting pet, but she's gorgeous, Libby. So he likes the rabbits and the chickens.
He does. He loves them. So I'm not wanting to get one myself, but, you know, yeah, he can play with them at nursery. That's fine.
Oh, don't you worry. When mine were 18 months old, around about that age, we didn't have anything. Now we've got goldfish, we've got cats, we've got dogs, we've had hamsters. And the next thing on the list, I think, is a bearded dragon lizard. So that's going to be the next thing.
It?
You can't get away from it. Yeah, definitely. We've got a reptile centre down the road. Love them. Actually, I think I want it more than the kids do.
Do you really? Annie, my goodness. Oh, Libby, sorry, I don't know why we started with animals, but let's talk about you and your running, because you are an incredible athlete. My first question I want to ask you is not so serious question, really, but where do you keep your medals? Because that's what I always want to know from Paralympians, Olympians with their gold medals.
Do you know, it's really boring. I actually only keep them in a cupboard. And then if I'm doing, they're just kept away. You actually wouldn't know I did athletics if you came to my house, other than lots
Why
of shoes.
You?
No, not at all. It's a very normal looking house. There's no real sport stuff anywhere.
I've got mine, and obviously mine are not like yours, but I've got them on the back of a door. So every time I go through the door, they clank. And that gives me a kind of enormous amount of pleasure, the clank of the medals. So you've got your gold medals in a cupboard.
I do, yeah. Actually, I like the idea of them being on the back of a door. I think that sounds like a good idea.
Do you know what? I don't have any Olympic medals, but I have a few world and European medals. And they're nowhere to be seen. If you came to my house, you wouldn't know that I was an athlete either.
You two, honestly, you've got proper medals, not like me. You need to celebrate this. So Libby, take us back to when you were a little girl and you started running. And we'll talk about, because you're registered blind, aren't you? So just tell us a little bit about how that has affected you and when it first happened.
So I've got a condition called Stargardt's macular dystrophy, which is really long-winded and boring. But basically, it's a loss of central vision. So it's genetic. I've inherited it from both my parents, even though there's no family history of it. So it's a bit of a random one. And basically, it gradually gets worse as I got older. So when I was younger, I was fully sighted. And then over the years, it's just gradually deteriorated. It's really pretty, to be honest. It actually looks like a firework scrunched up, and it's like sparkly. And it's like that even when I close my eyes. So it's quite nice. It could be a lot worse. So, yeah, that's what it looks like. And that's sort of how I got the condition. And I got diagnosed when I was 9. And it was a bit of a stressful process, actually, because I was struggling to read the board in school. My parents just thought I needed glasses. So I went to the opticians a few times, and they basically said that I was just shy, and gave me some glasses, which don't actually help my condition at all. And had about a year of that, and then ended up getting moved to 2 different hospitals where I eventually got diagnosed with my condition. So it was a bit stressful at the time, and I didn't really understand what was going on. And it just so happened that I'd recently joined my local athletics club, because you had to be 9 to start your club. It sort of coincided quite nicely, and I felt like I got to sort of be a different person in a way, and nobody really knew me from school, and I could just get on with things and be a normal child. And with all this stuff going on at home as well, it was nice to just sort of escape.
The way you've sort of told the story is really amazing, in the sense that we're kind of here, I think Lou and I, a bit mouths open, because actually to have been fully sighted and then to gradually lose your sight is, well, it's scary, right, too, I would have thought. Very scary.
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy, because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
I mean, I think for me, what was most, I knew I was never going to go completely blind. I was told that, but they just said it's going to get worse. But when you're 9, you don't really have a concept of what that actually means. And I got told that I was now disabled. I was like, I'm not in a wheelchair. This is really weird. Like, because for me, I just associated disabled people in wheelchairs. I just didn't really know anything about it. So it was a bit confusing. And I didn't really know where my life would go or anything, because at that point, you know, the Paralympics wasn't really well known. It wasn't on the television that much, and we didn't really watch any level of disability sport. So I just had no concept of anything like that, really. And it was quite scary and a bit daunting at the time. But I suppose I was just a kid, and you just sort of get on with it, don't you? Crack on.
Yeah, I mean, plainly. And at that stage, so obviously then, I mean, how did school work? Because that must have been really tricky.
I recently actually moved primary schools as well. I was having a bit of bother at the last one. So I'd just started a new school, and they were brilliant, to be honest. They really accommodated me, but I had to have like a classroom assistant. And as a child, you just want to fit in with everybody. You don't want to be different from anyone else. And it does make you feel a bit segregated. And I had to get all my work enlarged, and it was a bit of a pain in the bum, to be honest. And it was really heavy stuff, because they'd like literally large print the entire textbook, and you're like, oh. I mean, honestly, if tablets had been invented when I was in school, my life would have been so much easier.
Of course. So for somebody now being diagnosed, there'd be masses of things which are different.
Oh, masses differently. So obviously, phones are so much more accessible. Tablets, computers even are more accessible. You know, you don't necessarily need magnifying glasses anymore like you did back then. You'd have like a little CCTV computer to enlarge your work. You don't need that now. Your phone and your tablet, you know, just does all those things for you, really. So my phone's full of pictures of labels and, you know, rubbish in the shops and price tags and things. Yeah, just because it as a magnifying glass, it's great.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. And so I love the way you described it as being pretty and like a crumpled up firework, didn't you? So what do you see? That's what you see now, is it?
Yeah, so I'm looking at my computer screen now, but I can't see the computer at all. And it's literally, it's really pretty. So it's pinks and yellows and like blues, like highlights colours. So like really fluorescent colours. And it just sort of sparkles, and it's just in the centre of my vision the whole time. And it's just really pretty. So it could be like a black hole, and that would be a bit more boring to look at. But it's really nice.
Because I make assumptions, because I'm not, you know, I can see, and you make assumptions that it would be dark or blackness.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing as well. There's so many different eye conditions. It's quite hard to keep up with them all. I don't know much about a lot of them, but basically, like, every condition's different and affects people in like different ways as well. So it's quite hard to keep up with or have any sort of level of understanding. So yeah, I'm quite fortunate, really, that mine is quite pretty, but obviously some of them aren't like that. They're different. So yeah.
So Libby, we're talking a lot about your condition, mm-hmm. but you've done some amazing things. You really have. So you talked about joining the local athletics club when you were 9. How did it progress? Because, you know, 2 Paralympic gold medals. Not many people can say that, right? So talk us through your career. How, I mean, you're only just over 30 now. So, yeah. So you still, and you actually were off to planning for Tokyo as well, weren't you? So
I was planning on competing in Tokyo this year, but obviously with the pandemic, it has been moved to next year, fingers crossed, everything goes to plan still. But I mean, I first started obviously my career when I was 9, and it was just a bit of fun, to be honest. I'd actually been doing dance classes from the age of 2 till then as well. And I really enjoyed doing that. I wasn't very good at it, but I just quite enjoyed it. So I had to make a decision when I was about 10, whether I wanted to carry on dancing or not, because I wanted to do my athletics more. And I just sort of felt much more comfortable there. I got to do lots of different events, because obviously when you're that age, you can do, you know, longer distances, you can do jumps, throws. I did have a go at hurdles at one point, which I think is crazy, but I did do that. So there's just so many different things that you could do. And I just enjoyed, yeah, just the variety, really. So I got into that. And then basically my mum found out that there was a charity called British Blind Sport where I could go to, like, sort of squad days, really. They were all dotted around the country, predominantly in the Midlands, actually. And I got to meet other kids that had a visual impairment, and we got to train together, and it was the sort of social side of it as well. And from there, I ended up doing some competitions, and it sort of just, that was my sort of step into the sort of para community, really. And 14, I'd sort of stuck at it, and I was 14, I got sort of scouted, I suppose, and I got put on.
Oh, don't be embarrassed.
Yeah, scouted.
Come on, you were chosen one.
I was chosen to go onto the development programme, just got involved even more than I was exposed to more people like myself that were just normal kids that had disabilities, and it was just phenomenal, really. And it was such an honour to sort of get involved in it. And I remember in 2004 watching the Paralympics in Athens, and I just thought, do you know what, I wouldn't mind being there one day. I thought it'll be take me a long time to get there, but yeah, then a couple of years after that, I went to my first World Championships, where I was sort of expected to just go for the experience, and ended up coming away with a silver medal in my 200 meters. So I was like, oh, actually I could maybe make a career out of this. And then 2 years after that, I was in Beijing winning a silver medal in the 100 meters. So yeah, it kind of happened quite quickly.
You got your silver medal in the 2008 Beijing Paralympics, only 4 years after watching and just, you know, imagining sometime in the distant future, you know, you might make a Paralympics, and you won silver. How old were you then?
I was 18 in Beijing, and I didn't really know what to expect, obviously being my first Paralympic Games. I just had no idea, really, and it was just mind-blowing, to be honest, to compete in front of like 80,000 people. It was just incredible. And that's when I got the bug then to, like, keep going.
I love that. I love so much about you. I particularly love your modesty. Genuinely, it's so charming. And then you go on and you go to you went from Beijing to, where was it after that? It was
London in 2012. Yeah. And to be honest as well, like, so the games, obviously I won another silver medal in London, but in Beijing I was so happy that I got a silver medal, you see, because it was my first Paralympic Games, it was the experience, and I obviously didn't know what to expect. And then 4 years later in London, I really wanted to win. So I was absolutely devastated when I came second. It was really strange, because I think I just had an expectation of myself that this is what I wanted to do. And I tried to sort of adapt things so they'd been even better than before. And I mean, I ran really well. I ran a personal best. So it wasn't like I ran badly or anything, but I was just so annoyed with myself. But the experience with the game was just absolutely incredible. Like, it felt like the crowd were just giving you a massive hug when you were, like, running around the stadium. It was just incredible. It was absolutely insane. It's so hard to describe, because that experience was just out of this world. And it's not likely to ever happen again in my lifetime, having, you know, Paralympic Games at home. And obviously I won't be competing then either.
And I mean, to be at home as well, like the home crowds were absolutely huge, weren't they? And I cannot imagine the intensity you must feel when you're in that arena with literally thousands and thousands of people cheering your name. I mean, immense.
It was just mesmerizing, to be honest. Like the atmosphere and the energy, you could just feel it was literally electric. And especially like for the 200 meters, because you're coming around the bend, you sort of feel it even more. Like the crowd carry you. It's really strange how it sort of feels. It feels like they're lifting you around the track. And it's just probably it's one of the best experiences of my life. Just even not even like winning, just having that feeling of the crowd carrying you, it's just amazing. And yeah, like it's so special. The 2012 Paralympics was literally like a turning point for Paralympic sport, to be honest. It's when we sort of got recognised as athletes and not just like disabled people. And people recognised our ability and not necessarily our disability. So it was really positive.
Oh, honestly, it just takes me back to it now because it was so, you know, we weren't doing it. We were all so excited to watch it. And you're right, watching kind of real heroes on an international stage was just a fantastic thing. And I just want to talk about, so we went on from there to then go to Rio. So every time you go to Paralympics, the pressure gets ramped up a bit, doesn't it?
It does. Definitely there is, especially the more experienced you become, there's a higher expectation. But for me, I actually got taken off funding in the December of 2015 because I didn't run particularly well in the World Championships. A couple of months prior to that, I was having problems with my guide runner. We weren't getting on. And I got taken off funding. And to be honest, it was literally the best thing that ever happened to me because I learned to look after myself in a way that I wasn't able to when I was on funding. So I was completely accountable and responsible for myself. I found a guide runner, Chris Clark, who like I work really, really well with, and we get on great and we train really well together. And when we compete, it just sort of clicks. So everything sort of fell into place for me. And it was great because I had no pressure. I had no targets to hit because I wasn't obviously funded. So I went into Rio, like, just like, oh, well, you know, didn't even know if I was going to be here 8-9 months ago. And now I'm obviously competing, and what will be, I'll just have to put my best performance down and see what happens. So I ran very relaxed in comparison to other people.
Very relaxed and got 2 gold medals.
Yeah, and got 2 gold medals in the process, yeah.
I'm so interested. So you mentioned your guide runner. So explain to us kind of like as an athlete how it works then.
The easiest way to explain running with a guide is like doing a 3-legged race, but attached at the hand rather than at the foot. And so okay. Everything has to be, especially for sprints, it's not so much longer distance, but for sprints, everything has to be completely in sync. You know, if you're slightly off, it completely throws the efficiency of how you run. You get snags and it doesn't feel very fluid. And it's about having really good timing and rhythm. So it takes quite a lot of practice and it can be a bit scary sometimes.
I'm sure it is. I'm genuinely, so you have your hands tied together. So your hands have to move, hands and arms have to move at the same time.
Exactly at the same time.
Which hand do you have tied?
I normally actually have my left one, but at the minute I'm experimenting. I'm having a go on the other side.
I can imagine it's a bit like, sleeping on the wrong side of the bed or something.
It is. It's really odd. It feels very bizarre when you start moving things around a bit. It doesn't feel normal.
So you've got your left hand tied to his right hand.
Yeah.
So they obviously have to move in the same time. And then obviously your other arms move the same time. And then your legs, do they move? Tell me about legs.
Yeah.
Left leg moved at the same time as his left leg? Or
no, so his left, so it'll be my left leg and his right leg.
And of course it is.
Yeah. So it's
right, my goodness.
It takes a lot of like practice, and it's one of those things that you either like get straight away, or you don't. But the more practice you have, the better your timing is and your rhythm. And it's not necessarily about the verbal communication, because he'll say little things to me. It's actually about the physical communication as well. So I know certain very minute movements, and it'll just be maybe like the change in his arm range. It means different things to me when I'm running. So it means I'm at a different point on the track and I need to change my technique a little bit. So it's not just verbal, it is physical as well, and that takes a lot of practice and getting to know someone.
I've watched your races and the tension, you know, you think about like, you know, when someone's running without a guide, and the tension at the beginning of a 100-meter final is immense. But it wasn't all plain sailing, wasn't it? Because there was a there was a protest from another country, another runner, and you were initially disqualified in the qualification race.
So it was really quite distressing, to be honest. Basically, they were querying whether Chris had dragged me, but the way we basically, you have to go and look at all the film footage and stuff, but everybody was doing exactly the same thing, and they were trying to say that my guide was changing his technique before I was and all this, which is technically true because he's trying to guide me, so he can't do everything exactly the same as me all the time. And basically it was a bit in my race where Chris lifts his arm a bit higher, and it, for me, it means like we're gonna go into a phase where you sort of just hold your tempo. Now they were like, oh well, that's him dragging you. But when we look back at everybody's footage, everybody had done exactly the same thing. It was just, they just decided to pick on me. So it's really frustrating. And then they were saying, well, if you're going to disqualify me, we're going to have to disqualify everybody else that's done it. So it just got a bit silly. But unfortunately, I was against Teresina Guillemina, who was the Brazilian gold medal hope, and she'd been predicted to win quite a few gold medals and unfortunately didn't win any. And I think it just didn't necessarily look very good for Brazil, their golden girl.
And then she went on to be disqualified in the 200,
didn't she?
You also won. Yeah.
Yeah, she did. She got disqualified in the 200. And do you know what? That was horrible, actually. That was a really horrible experience, because obviously we're blindfolded. We know someone's false started. We don't know who it is. And then the crowd started to boo. And we were like, who are they booing at? Are they booing at
me? Gosh.
Are they booing at the officials? Who are they booing at? And it was, the crowd in Brazil was very different from any other crowd that I've experienced before, because they were a bit like a football stadium. Like they like.
So were they booing the officials then?
Yeah, they were booing the officials because they'd given her a red card. But obviously I didn't know that and didn't really understand what was going on. So it was horrible, because they were like, oh, this isn't good for morale.
No, I mean, there's so many things that are going on in your, you know, when you can't see, like you see, you can't see it, you can't judge, can you? So is Chris trying to tell you at that point what's going on? Because he presumably can't work it out much either.
He was trying to tell me what was going on, and it was just a bit, sort of confusing, because we thought we'd actually false started, because we actually had a really good start. And then we were like, oh no, is it us? And then we were thinking, oh gosh, we got this far, please don't. And then I was trying to say to him, like, what's going on? And he was struggling to understand. And when Teresina started to walk off and people were booing, he was like, oh no, it was like, don't worry, they're not booing us, it's fine. But it was horrible initially, thinking, oh God, are they booing me? Because obviously I'd had a bit of, she wasn't particularly nice about me in the media either, so I didn't know whether people had been, you know, were booing
sour me grapes. Sour grapes, honestly. I mean, you went into that 200 meter as the world record holder. You achieved a Paralympic record there, 2 gold medals. Life is brilliant, right? But it wasn't, was it?
No.
So you got home and you thought, I've achieved everything, but something is not quite right.
So I got back home, I went on holiday, I got engaged, I was really happy. And then about 2 weeks after, I was having my break and things, and I just felt like I didn't know who I was anymore. And I didn't know who I was, like, not being an athlete. And it was the most sort of, it was heartbreaking, really, because people are like, you should be really happy, you're a double Paralympic gold medalist, like, your life is amazing, you've got everything that you wanted. And I was just like, it doesn't feel good, though. It doesn't feel the way that I thought it was going to feel. And I just sort of spiraled from there, to be honest. I just got to the point where I didn't want to get up in the morning. I didn't want to shower. I didn't want to go training. I didn't want to see my friends. I didn't even want to text my friends or speak to them on the phone. I was in such a bad place. And it was really difficult to try and explain to people how I was feeling, because to them, I've got everything I've wanted and I should be happy. But I just didn't. I didn't feel it at all. It was horrible.
Oh, Libby, so how did you get out of that?
So I basically had a breakdown at the track. I went and found the sports psychologist and I just burst into tears. I was like, I just don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't feel good. I like feel really depressed and low. And she said, like, let's go and talk to the doctor. And he was absolutely amazing. I ended up getting like psychiatric help by a psychiatrist called Alan Johnson. And he was amazing. And I think he deals with a lot of sports people that have had lots of different issues. And he just sort of talked to me about my life, really. And I realised that my problems weren't about my sport. It was about me as a person and, you know, me not knowing myself. But it took me a while to get there and realise that that's what it was. And from then, I sort of made a point to try and do stuff outside of the track that wasn't just about athletics and just sort of get to know myself, really. It sounds really obvious, but I think a lot of people in different careers end up sometimes not knowing and coming to these sort of crossroads where they don't really know what they want to do anymore.
I think lots of people listening will entirely relate to that on lots of, you know, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to be winning two gold medals, do you, to sort of think what is life all about?
Exactly. And I did really, really struggle, and it took me quite a long time. And even now, I'm not the same person I was. It's left its sort of mark on me.
Has it?
Yeah, definitely. I used to be a really sort of confident person, and had, you know, I don't know, I just felt like I could do anything. And now sometimes I question myself, like, oh, can I do that? You know, should I do it? Are people judging me? And I never used to care, but I still don't necessarily care that much now. But it just sometimes, like, those questions crop up and I doubt myself, whereas I never used to be like that.
Do you know, that could, maybe, I mean, you know, I'm not a psychologist, let's be really clear, but maybe that, I don't know, you know, age, you know, because age can affect you, can't you, in some ways? Maybe, you know, you can get that double-edged sword, can't you?
Definitely. And I think sometimes having kids does make that make you think about things a bit more as well. Because I'm always thinking, oh, I need to be a good role model and a good parent.
Oh my goodness, you listen. Listen, no, you know, you will be a brilliant role model. I mean, you know, sport is a great thing for kids to, you know, see their parents do at whatever level, you know, but particularly when, you know, they have a mum who is successful as you. Now, I want to talk a little bit, moving on to a little bit going away from post-Rio, something that I am incredibly impressed with, because I do it occasionally and I'm really rubbish at it.
This is serious stuff, isn't it, Anna?
This is serious stuff. But my little girl is an ice skater. And my boy skates too as well. He did a little bit of ice hockey and they are amazing. And I'm absolutely rubbish. I'm like Bambi with these kind of stiff legs. And I do it and I go and skate. And I am really crap. I mean, I'm not hanging on to the side. But you got through to the final of
Dancing on Ice.
You got, and I've watched you, and you are amazing. And honestly, I mean, you talk about not having confidence, but, you know, I guess, you know, doubt is a good thing, because it means that, you know, perhaps we're challenging ourselves. But to, you know, to go on and do something like that, okay, you're well supported and all the rest of it. But listen, you know, I've got two eyes that work well, and I'm quite terrified on the ice, and you're on the ice and you can hardly see anything, and you are performing absolutely brilliantly. Talk us through Dancing on Ice, Libby.
So when I first got asked to go for an audition, I was thinking, oh, it's Paralympic year. Should I? Is it going to be a bit too risky? And I kind of just thought, oh, I'm just going to go for it. And if I hurt myself, at least I've said yes to something. And yeah, it was just incredible. It was a great experience. I had such a fantastic dance partner. So Mark Hamretti, I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better pro, to be honest. He was just incredible. He was really patient, and because he is a like former world class athlete himself, I think he gets like the athlete mentality, which helped me a lot. So if I was like, oh, can we train for like an extra 2 hours, he's like, oh yeah, yeah, that's great.
Say yes.
Yeah, he loved it. And he had to sort of keep me occupied, because sometimes I'd get a little bit bored of, you know, some of the, you know, the basic things. So I was like, no, we have to do different lifts because those ones are too easy. And I was just like, oh, we need to keep pushing ourselves and challenging ourselves in different ways. But he was great because he came up with this system where we had worked in numbers like 1 to 5, and each number represented a different sort of movement or a different shape. And in ice skating, it's all about your shape and having nice lines and all this stuff, which I never knew anything about, by the way, before I did Dance on Ice. And yeah, it was just so much fun, and I loved working with him, and I just wanted to do really well. I wasn't great at the performance side of it. I'm not really good at acting, but it was quite nice getting a spray tan every week and getting my nails done.
I mean, I'm full of admiration, because it strikes me as really blooming dangerous for starters. And then also that, you know, but I suppose this comes from your running, doesn't it? That trust that you've got to have in someone. And you've got that with Chris, your guide, haven't you? So therefore, I suppose, you know, I'm not saying it's any way easy, but you know how to work with someone under really intense circumstances.
Definitely. Like working with Chris and having a guide runner has definitely helped me work with Mark on the ice. But I feel like you can tell straight away, you know, when you sort of touch someone, you know whether they're going to be like a good support network or not. You kind of get a vibe whether they're a little bit nervous or not. And if they're a bit nervous, it, you know, makes you feel a bit like jumpy, doesn't it? So as soon as I started working with him, I just felt really comfortable. And he obviously is really confident on the ice as well. And I just thought, you know, I want to prove to myself that I can do it. And it'd be great to just prove to other people that, you know, especially being visually impaired is a very invisible disability. And it's very hard to, you know, get people to understand how my sight works, especially when they can't visually see it. And I thought, oh, it'll just be a great opportunity for me to sort of make people more aware that there's lots of different eye conditions as well out there. So I thought it'd be a good platform to sort of show that as well. And just that you can do things if you put your mind to it and challenge yourself. It's good to challenge yourself and make yourself feel uncomfortable sometimes.
I think that's a really good point. And on that note, Libby, you know, lockdown won't have been easy for someone like you with your disability. You know, when we look at what's gone on in terms of social distancing, you know, the way that shops are full with arrows of left, right, in, out. I mean, that is really difficult for people who have, you know, problems with sight.
It's incredibly difficult. I mean, sometimes I wouldn't take my guide dog because I was doing a food shop and I need my arms to collect things. And it was really stressful because people would wave at you to come into the shop. And I'm just stood there like a numpty, like, I'm, you know, they're like, you need to come in. I'm like, I can't see you. And it's really difficult to sort of explain that to someone. And then you're right, with the arrows on the floors in the shops and having one-way systems, and you know, I've been shouted at quite a few times just not necessarily following the right route, and it can be quite stressful, to be honest. And then sometimes I don't even see people, and then I'm not giving them space, and then they're unsure of why I'm not out of their way. And it's been an absolute minefield of different problems, to be honest. I mean, most shops I go to now, I explain straight away that I can't see very well, and they are a lot much more accommodating. And obviously people are, you know, especially if you've got face mask on now, people don't mind you coming closer to them anymore. So it's been as restrictions have eased a bit, it has got better. But yeah, initially it was quite stressful, and it was just the one problem after the next.
Oh my goodness, I really feel for you. So tell us a little bit about your guide dog. So when you tell us about the guide dog first.
So I've got my guide dog Hattie. I've had her now 6.5 years. And she's
your black Labrador.
She's a black Labrador. She's lovely. She's really placid. But because she's getting a bit older now, she's 8, she's getting a little bit lazy. So I have to sort of drag her around sometimes. if she's not in the mood to work, she doesn't work. But yeah, she's great, and she's such a fantastic support for me, really. Predominantly just helping other people be more aware that I can't see very well. People automatically get out your way.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're with her, things are a bit easier, are they, for lots of different reasons?
Yeah, lots of different reasons are much easier. So predominantly the fact that people are instantly aware that you can't see very well, so they do tend to move out your way. But also the fact that, like, most Brits love dogs, so there's a much more positive interaction with a person straight away, because they want to talk to the dog normally. I mean, normally people remember Hattie's name over mine, you know, so there's a much more positive interaction, and people are a lot more helpful, to be honest. Yeah. So it makes a big difference.
So in terms of your life and how it's turned out in the end, in terms of your sport, what do you think you would have done if you hadn't found sport, and how has sport, I guess, improved your life?
I think this is a really good question, because I actually have no idea what I'd be doing if I didn't do sport. And I think that's because I was a very shy, timid little girl. Even then, if you told me now that I would have gone to 3 Paralympic Games and, you know, talked, you know, been on Dance on Ice and done corporate speaking and gone into schools, I wouldn't have imagined that at all for myself, because I wouldn't have been able to have seen that sort of journey. But for me, sport's given me so many different things, like even just a level of independence and, you know, going to events on your own, learning to make small talk with complete and utter strangers. And, you know, just being able to tell people that I can't even see very well. I've learned all those things from doing sport, and it's made a massive impact on my life, because now I'm very confident at getting public transport on my own, going into shops on my own. You know, I wouldn't be nervous about going into a new place, which over the years I have struggled with, like being, you know, having a daunting feeling going to a new location. So I think it's just made me feel a lot more confident and given me different social skills that I don't think I would have necessarily had if I hadn't done sport. And also, I've got to meet some really cool people that have got, like, especially like on our Paralympic team, some of the disabilities. Like, I was so ignorant until I came onto my squad now. And, you know, just learning about different people it's given me so much.
Tell us about Dan. This is the personal question.
Yeah, so I've been
dad to Edward.
Yeah, Edward's dad. So I've been with him now since, well, just before Rio, really. I met him in the May of 2016.
Oh, you mentioned it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've got our gorgeous little boy, Edward. And Dan's currently on the Paralympic judo squad. So hopefully Tokyo goes ahead next year. He'll be going back out to Japan. He also competed in London, actually, in 2012. And we probably crossed paths, but I can't actually remember meeting him with the chaos of the village and things. But he's got his own gym. So he's also registered blind as well. And he set up a gym in Leicester at New Parks. And it's predominantly for kids, really, in the community. And he puts on boxing sessions and all these fitness sessions for them. And it's really incredible, to be honest. He tries to get everybody involved. He loves the fitness industry. I mean, sometimes I can't bother going to the gym. I think he would go every day if he could.
What happens, though? So presumably what happens next year? You're both going to go, hopefully, fingers crossed, to the Paralympics.
Yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll both go to the Paralympics in Tokyo. He'll obviously be with judo, I'll be with athletics. And yeah, Edwards, hopefully, he'll come with us, but he might not be with myself, or he might come with my parents or my sister or someone. And I'd like him to come out and watch. I don't want him to be away from me for too long.
No, it's difficult, isn't it?
It is. And also, I've been away from him for like 2 weeks max, and I think that was a bit too long. So I think a whole month of being away would be too much. You know, I miss him. And they grow so much as well at this age as well. They change like every day.
And they keep changing. Honestly, they keep changing. It's extraordinary. Louise's daughters are much bigger than mine, and but mine, you know, suddenly my 11-year-old daughter's got 5 size feet, and you go, how the hell did that happen? We have sort of brushed over a little bit the fact that, you know, this has been a difficult year for all athletes, like very, very difficult in terms of, you know, preparing for an event that comes around every 4 years, and you didn't find out for quite a long time that the Paralympics was going to be cancelled. So you had to find ways to train. How did that impact you mentally? One, trying to continue training for something you didn't know was going to go ahead, and then obviously finding out that you had to wait another year.
For me, I was gutted because I was in incredible shape after Dancer on Ice, and I was thinking, oh, hopefully I'll be able to carry this and keep at this this shape until the games. So when I found out that, you know, it all, you know, the track was shutting, I really struggled to train on the grass and like astro surfaces, because, you know, there can be like dents in the ground and things. It just makes it a little bit more difficult for me to have any sort of perception of where the ground is. So my coach Joe just said to just leave it for a little bit and see how things were. So I just ate biscuits, to be honest, and had rubbish food, Nate pizza, for a few weeks. I just thought, oh.
For how long? 2 weeks?
Oh, it's about 2 or 3 weeks. I mean,
that's not very long, Libby, in the scheme of things.
I mean, even now, I have to be careful with the biscuits, especially having kids. They're always lying around and thinking, oh, no.
Get the rubbish ones. As well, Annie?
Oh, me too. I'm tempted. You know, my worst thing is chocolate digestives, milk chocolate digestives. I mean, honestly, it's terrible. And I think that because I've sort of cut back on the bars of chocolates, that biscuits are somehow not as bad because I'm not getting stuck into Mars bars and Snickers and stuff like that. But then I'm on sort of like 8 sort of, you know, chocolate digestives a day, you know.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I've tried to buy the rubbish ones to stop myself from eating them, but it still doesn't work because you're still like, oh, I'll eat that one. So I've had to sort of steer clear of the biscuits. But as soon as the track reopened and the gym reopened, it's been a lot better just getting back into my routine again and having another social outlet, which has been nice, and not just being stuck in the house.
How do you think, I mean, this is a big question, but in terms of like, it will have impacted so many athletes. You know, so many athletes would have been thinking, you know, about the Olympics, about the Paralympics, you know, this is going to be my last year, or I'm in the shape of my life. Or for some athletes, it might have worked in their favour, but it changes things monumentally, doesn't it? I mean, it's a whole different Paralympics that we will be looking at in Tokyo 21 to what we would have been looking at in 2020.
I mean, it's going to be completely different. And even if we just look on the logistics of even getting there, I mean, that's going to look different. I've heard rumours that we'd have to quarantine before we even flew over to Japan. And then in Japan at the moment, we'd still have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And it then just extends the time that you're there even longer. But then also you're not allowed to train and while you're quarantining, and it gets very complicated, and it's sort of quite demoralising really, because you think, oh, the crowds aren't necessarily going to be there. I mean, and like I was saying earlier about competing in London in 2012, you know, that atmosphere makes such a huge difference to your performance. I mean, that's why I like competing in a big stadium, because there's people there to sort of carry you around. And I think, you know, it's going to be completely different, and our athletes going to raise their game when there's no spectators. I mean, Paralympics, we are used to, especially domestic meets, nobody being there. But it's different at Paralympic Games, you know, it's huge, and it's that, for some people, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and experience. So it's going to be very different. And, you know, it's kind of sad, really, for me, knowing what it can be like, knowing what it could be like.
There's so many things, aren't there, that we've had to adapt to over the last few months. And that's frustrating for you, isn't it?
It's really frustrating. And I think, you know, for me, I'm 30 now, and I was thinking, oh, this probably was going to be my last Paralympics. And, you know, I hadn't sort of made a decision about retiring or not, but when it's been taken away from you for another year, I mean, 4-year cycle is quite a long time anyway. Your life is revolved around 4-year cycles. So for an extra year to be added on, it sort of scuppers a lot of people's plans and things, and, you know, trying to motivate yourself for another year, it can be really hard. especially when you're not allowed to train the way that you trained before, because we're not allowed to train in big groups and things. And there's so many rules around how long you're at the track for or in the gym for, and you've got to clean everything. It then becomes more about making sure that everyone's safe and clean everything than actually training.
I think lots of people will entirely sympathise with you. And, you know, there's so many things that we're just having to change all the time. And we're doing a big thing on Her Spirit about your best year yet. Let's, you know, this hopefully is going to be your best year yet. Another one. Yeah. What would your top tips be, you know, because we all need help at this point, don't we, to get through and find a way through?
I think my top tips would be to stay in a routine. It's hard when you've got kids as well. I've learned that now. But like just getting into a routine, like getting up and having a shower in the morning, whether that's like having a coffee first and having your breakfast, just keeping into a bit of a routine to start your day, because it's so easy. And for me, especially at the beginning of lockdown, I mean, I just stayed in my pyjamas for half the day. So that's not good for you. Don't do that.
No, don't worry. You and everyone else, Libby. You and everyone
except
else.
Except me.
You had to be on the red sofa.
Yeah, do not stay in your pyjamas. I mean, take that.
Yeah, definitely don't stay in pyjamas. And just sort of give yourself like a list of little jobs to do in the day and things, and just get that done first. And just sort of prioritise what's important. Definitely remove your biscuits from the house because they're not good.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think bread is not good for you either, because I've had quite a lot of toast as well.
Oh my God, that's me. We're kindred spirits. I live on 6 pieces of toast a day.
Perfect. Do you? So I'm completely opposite. I am biscuits. I can pretty much leave. Chocolate, I can leave. It's crisps. Oh. It's crisps. It's Wotsits. It's Snackerjacks. It's all, honestly, I think I should just eat salt. Maybe that would sort things out.
But I know my mum has been doing Zoom classes and she loves them because they're still having like a social on there as well. Yeah. And I think that's a really good idea. I mean, if I couldn't go to the track and mix with people, then I would definitely be doing some Zoom classes because it's quite handy.
So it's pyjamas, biscuits and possibly classes online.
Yeah, classes online. Just staying in a routine, I think, is really helpful for your mental health as well, not just for your physical health. Definitely.
We could be looking at Her Spirit, couldn't we, in terms of like places to go to do amazing classes. Lou missed her bike class last night. That was a bit of a shame that was on Her Spirit. She's getting big thumbs down from Mel Berry about that one. But yeah. Her Spirit has some amazing classes as well.
And Libby, so let's look forward, just before we go, just briefly to next year. So, you know, you've got 2 gold medals, a cluster of silver medals. Mm-hmm. Do you have a goal for that, or is it so difficult at this point that it's changing?
For me, initially, after I had Edward, I thought, you know what, if I just get to Paralympic Games, I'll be happy. Because I mean,
he's only 18 months, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And I just thought, oh, well, that'll be an achievement in itself if I get back on the team. But, you know, realistically, I want to see myself at the top of the podium again.
I'm wondering also, because we see some women, don't we, Annie? I'm not sure we talked about it on the podcast, but I know I've had this conversation with you before about mums going back to athletics, because some of them, you know, it changes your body, and not, you know, you might assume that it makes you weaker, but that is not the case, is it, for some people?
I actually feel like physically I'm in a really good place, but also mentally you start like prioritising things a bit more, because you know you've only got a short period of time that you need to train. Like when you go to the track, you're like, right, okay, I'm taking time out from my son. I need to just concentrate on what I'm doing and not mess around or be there for like 3 hours and have a coffee and, you know, you know, I've got to get back home because I've got another person that I need to look after. But also like just even like going to bed earlier and, you know, your sleep is so much more important and having that recovery. So everything sort of becomes a little bit more intense in some ways because you've got another person to look after that is more your priority in a way.
Yeah, I reckon you can do it. Yeah. I reckon she can do it, Annie. Don't
Fingers
you?
Crossed.
I absolutely know she can do it. And I can really understand what she's saying about, you know, having that little person in your life that kind of makes you be a little bit more organised and you maximise your time better. I mean, on that note, I've got to let you into a big secret. I mean, I've got involved in something I really don't think I should have got involved in, but I put my hand up and Lou is looking on this Zoom call
going,
worried,
Libby, what I'm really
is she, Chris? I put myself down for class rep. Right. Don't laugh. I've never done this in my life. Honestly, I mean, I get things done, Libby. I do, don't I, Lou? I do get things done. But I'm not known as the most organised. I'm slightly scatty. And they would just put it... And last night, I don't know what it was, whether it was that little glass of red wine I had, I just saw this slight desperate message. We're still looking for a class rep for 5VB. And I was like... Oh, and I press the button and this morning I got, oh, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. But you know what I reckon? It's a real positive because I reckon I'm going to have to sort of just be a little bit more organized, aren't I? I mean, if I'm telling other mums that, what? It's terrible,
Libby,
isn't it?
Libby, if Annie, to be honest with you, if Annie was my class rep, I would be over the moon.
But I wouldn't send out the messages that they send out. Go, don't forget it's for a school or there's a school trip or don't forget.
Oh, I can't wait. I bet you do start doing that.
Oh my goodness me. I mean, I've given myself a bit of a nervous tummy now. Just the fact that I've let it out, haven't I?
Yeah,
I've put it out
brilliant.
There in the universe.
You're going to be counted on now.
I don't, Libby. That's not fair of you. I'm stressed enough as it is.
I've never been class rep, Libby. Is that your role or not?
No, I'd pass on that. Definitely not. Be responsible for other people.
I'm totally with you, Libby. Oh, listen, Libby, it's lovely. It's lovely to speak to you. I mean, your modesty shines through. It's just a lovely thing to see, actually, somebody who's so successful. You're absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much. And have you got two guide dogs in the house?
Yeah, I've got Hattie and Elmo. Elmo's a bit nutty. He's Dan's dog. He's lovely.
Is he a Labrador as well?
He's a golden lab.
Oh, he's a golden lab. So like I've got a black lab and a golden lab. And do they get on?
They do now. Hattie didn't like him initially because he likes to think he's the boss, but actually Hattie's the boss. But he's got a totally different personality. He's a bit bonkers, but it's a good mix.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because mine are completely different as well. And one is the boss inside and then the other is the boss outside. So they've kind of like worked it out. And they know when they're working as soon as they have their harnesses put on.
Yeah, as soon as they have their harnesses on, they know like that is it. Especially Hattie's a bit like lazy, like I say. She likes to sniff a little bit. Whereas Elmo, as soon as you put his harness on, he's just like focused
on it.
Yeah.
And what does Edward think of them? He presumably loves them.
He does. He absolutely adores them. So initially Elmo didn't like Edward because Elmo's a bit of an attention seeker, and obviously Edward,
and then you got
was a bit like, obviously, why are you hugging that child, like, stroke me. But now Elmo and Edward are like best friends. And then Hattie doesn't like being pulled or had her, you know, tail pulled or ears pulled or whatever, so yeah, she took a little bit more time warming up to him, but he gets in their bed with them and everything now, so
does he?
Yeah, they love him now.
Do they share a bed, the dogs?
Yeah, they share a bed. They love sharing a bed. I mean, even I've tried to put them in separate beds before, and they like, one, they fight over which bed they're having, but then sometimes it's like they want the other bed. So it's just like, you know what? They're going to have the same bed. So they've got a massive bed that they sleep in.
Oh, it's lovely. Oh, thank you. It's so lovely to speak to you. Thank you so much. And best of luck in the next year.
Thank you very much
for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you, Libby. Thank you.
Annie, I know over the years you've talked to so many athletes, Paralympians, Olympians. And what's really striking about Libby is she's just incredibly modest, isn't she?
So modest. And it's, you know, she would have every right to sort of kind of, you know, be quite happy with herself. But actually, she's almost too far the other way that you want to say, do you recognise what you achieved? Yeah. You know, and the times that she's run as well, they're absolutely magnificent. The commitment, 2 gold medals, 2 silvers, you know, 1 on home soil. And she's only 30 as well. She was 30 this year. And, you know, that's incredibly young to have achieved what she's achieved. You know, maybe one day she will wake up and go, actually, you know what?
I did that.
But I, you know, I just think that is her and that is her personality. And I think that is what makes her so lovely. And I think you kind of have 2 camps of athletes. You have the ones that are very happy with themselves and have, you know, the egos and stuff. And you have the Libbies of this world that is just kind of taking it all in her stride.
Do you know what? Thank goodness for the Libbies. I think she's wonderful.
Annie, so do I.
goodness know when I next speak, but hopefully by then you'll have eggs.
Yeah, we've got eggs on the way. I reckon it's a matter of weeks. I really
you have to send me one.
And there might be a lizard in the house, and you know, I might have had to sort of maybe step down as class rep because I can't cope. But anyway,
looking forward to that story.
Maybe we're all thriving and we've got eggs, and I've become really, you know,
really amazingly organised class rep.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, exactly. But all good. Happy weekend, darling. Have a good one.
Take care.
Bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Berry and I'm one of the co-founders of Her Spirit. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. These podcasts would not have been made possible without the support of the brilliant Medichex. Medichex offer an easy and affordable way to check your health with their simple and personalized blood tests. From hormones and nutrition to cholesterol and diabetes, there is something for everyone. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. Have a great day.